Right, session number 12276. Real one.
Mr. Cook, real one. Whereabouts were you born, please? Whereabouts were you born?
Gateshead.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a coal miner.
Did you go to school in Gateshead?
I did, yes.
And how old were you when you left?
I was 14.
Did you get a job?
I got a job within 2 months as a telegraph boy.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was in the Royal Navy then.
Why had you decided to join the Royal Navy?
Because I always wanted to be adventurous or do something. I wanted to get away out of Gateshead and do something.
Was it easy to get in?
No, there was quite a lot. In 1930, there was a problem with jobs. Well, I was okay because I had a job, and it was so easy for me to get a job, I thought. So, but anyway, I went to the army first, and what they told me about the army, I thought, I think I would like to go to sea. So he advised me on what to do, and I went to Newcastle and went and joined up at Rye Hill in Newcastle.
This was in 1930.
And then I went away on the 4th of November 1930 down to the Ganges at near Harwich.
How would you describe the training that you got at Ganges?
Very strict, but good. I liked it.
In what way was it strict?
Well, you were very, very, you were under discipline, continuous, but I seemed to get on all right.
And why was it so good?
Well, I think the idea was that I hadn't had an opportunity to have a better education. I'd been to an elementary school, and when I went to the Ganges, I was put in the advanced class, seaman advanced class, and it gave me an opportunity to learn subjects that I couldn't learn if I'd stayed at home, and that delighted me at the time. And then I started in to do the sports, you know, like rugby and cross country.
Did you feel you were treated fairly by those in charge of you at Ganges?
Oh yes. Yes, I did, yes. Because I did something wrong once. I got caught smoking, and I was punished by doing extra drill with a rifle and hopping around the parade ground with the rifle. But I still, you know, did all right.
Did you resent the punishment?
Well, I did at the time, but I didn't shout about it because, then again, I was disciplined. And I always felt that if only people today were disciplined, they would be much better off. But apart from rugby and running and boxing, I was in the boxing team. I really enjoyed, except I didn't like football at the Ganges.
What branch of the Navy did you go into eventually?
I went into the torpedo branch. I was in the seaman branch, you see, early on. And then I qualified for seaman torpedoman. And I went to the Defiance in Devonport and did my training there.
What What kind of responsibilities did you have on the Glorious as a seaman torpedoman?
Well, the first commission, you see, I was on 5 years, almost 5 years, and the first job I had was storekeeper. I was a storekeeper looking after the ammunition, the warheads, and the explosives that are used in different jobs, you know, and when you went ashore dressed for landing parties and things. And I used to prepare these charges and look after them in the magazines, detonators and all that stuff. And then I went into loading on aircraft. I was one of a crew of three. There was three torpedomen to load one tin fish on an aircraft. And the LTO used to be in charge and used to stand at the bows of the fish, and which was on a trolley, and we used to back it under the aircraft. And I'd be at one side, and the other seaman would be at other torpedoman would be at the other side, and we would load the tin fish on the aircraft. Do a test drop with the pilot in the cockpit, and then we used to reload it to the same number of turns on the hoist, you know. And then the next job I had, I was put as a mate to an LTO who used to prepare the fish. He used to do daily routines, weekly routines, and monthly routines. And I used to assist him. And this fellow was from Dover. Kirkby, they called him, from Dover. And he used to like to sit down and watch. And I used to be pleased he allowed me to do it all. And he checked all the time, make sure I did it right. And I that's the way I learned. And I was very interested in torpedo work. Now, on the course, of course, you do electrical work, high power, and a certain amount of low power. So I was interested in that too. But in 1938, I went into the Fleet Air Arms side of the torpedo branch on the Glorious when we recommissioned. And I did work on as a torpedoman on the flight deck and night flying stations. I used to take part in that. We used to be on standby in the sides of the flight deck, you know, on the different places in the flight deck. We had to be on because it was all lighting, and every torpedoman on the ship used to do something towards that night flying in case of something going wrong. And
how dangerous was it handling torpedo equipment on board ship?
Well, they were very, very heavy, you know, and they were awkward. If you touched the propellers, of course, they were very sharp, and you had guards to cover them. But you can still do some damage to yourself. And the plates that went over the different compartments, they were very sharp. Could be very sharp, you know, when you were putting them on. But I was really interested in that.
Was there any danger from explosions, though?
No, well, we never thought of that. When you loaded a tin fish for the job, you know, you had to, the primer was in. The primer was there in, you see, ready. But your detonator was in the detonator was in the pistol that went on the front. And you screwed your pistol in so far, so many turns, And then that was finished that. And when the tin fish took off, when it was dropped into the drink, the pistol propellers used to go round, and after so many turns, the detonator had reached right inside of the primer, so it was unsafe. And of course, when it hit an object, it went up. But as far as I never had any worries about it all the time I was working on torpedo work and making making up charges. But it was later on another ship, on the Stalker, another aircraft carrier I was on.
What were relations like between the lower deck and the officers on the Glorious, from your personal experience?
Well, I think, from my point of view, it was okay. We didn't have any problems that I knew. I was never on a charge or anything like that on the Glorious. I think it was a good ship. But then again, I was very interested in being occupied. I always occupied myself. And the second commission, I was a cinema operator of the ship. Now, just the day the ship went down, I was getting ready to show pictures that night. There should have been a show on that night. And I tested the machine, and I had all the reels ready to load, and it was round about 4:15. I'd had some tea, and I'd had a bath, and changed me underclothes and all that, but I'd had some tea. I bought some cheese at the canteen. Now, this has got a lot to do with how I survived, because I had something to eat in the mess. And I went back and tested the machine, and it was okay. And then there was the bang, bang. I looked out the porthole, because the cinema room was in the back of the ship, at the stern of the ship, you know, near the stern. And I looked through, and I saw on the quarter deck, and I saw the Marines loading the guns. And the ship started to speed up, and she was going pretty fast. And it says, the tannoy, you know, hands to action stations. And I went down the little ladder that we had from the cinema room. I locked the door, and I went to action stations, which was about amidships and down hatch. And the action stations I had was in damage control at that time. And the damage control position was under the officer's mess, in the wardroom flat, and it was next to a magazine, and it was just the manhole. And I went down the manhole, and the officer in charge of that, I think he was an electrical officer, I'm not sure now, but he said to me, "You take the phone, you better take the phone." And I took it, and of course I used to often get jobs on the phone. And so I was listening to all the different things from the different telephone people.
What do you remember hearing?
I remember hearing they're going to take some torpedoes on the flight deck. Now, we had, I think it was 5 swordfish on board, only 5. And they were going to take them up, and I says, "Thank God for that. You know, I wish I was up there to help to load them on, you know, because that was my..." And then, of course, the voice said, Oh, I don't think they're going to do it now. I think they've scrubbed it and they're taking them back again. He said they were taking the tin fish up as well, you know, hadn't they? But he said, oh, they've scrubbed it and taken them back. And I couldn't understand that. But anyway, that was the end of that. And then there was crashes all over the place. And another voice said, oh, the hangar's on fire. The hangar's on fire. And they're trying to get the screens down. The smoke, you know, the hangar screens to stop the air from coming in to make it worse. And things like that went on. And yes, he says they've got the screens down, and all that, you know, and little things like that. Which the gist of it was that. And I was worrying about the tin fish and the fire, all the tin fish, because we had them in the hangar on both sides, you know. And I was thinking about that. And then the order came through, prepare to abandon ship. Prepare to abandon ship. Prepare to abandon ship. Hands to abandon ship stations. So I was on a winch on the starboard side, which was right low down. And so I went for it, and you know, the ship was slewed over about 45 degrees to starboard. And I went forward on the starboard side, and I went up a hatch, and it was a job to get up. And when I went on deck, all the bodies were lying about, and the gun was on its side. There was a pile of bodies, and there was a doctor I saw, and a chap that I knew, he came from Gateshead. He was a Royal Marine, and he was having something done to his leg. Bandages, you know, for bandaging his leg. And of course I nipped aft as best I could, and I went on me position, and the boat was in the crutches like that, you know, the boat in the crutches. And when I tried to get it to lift it, the crutches were pushing against it, and I couldn't release it, the boat, to lift it. Well, generally, you've got enough room to lift your boat out of the crutches. Then you drop one of the crutches, the outboard one, and then you trellis your boat across to drop it into the sea. Couldn't do that. And once the officer in charge had realised what was happening, him and I discussed it. He said, well, we can't do anything, so we'll have to go back to action stations. So I left the winch and went forward again, and still like that. And I thought, well, if this ship capsizes, I'm going to be in one of them, in, you know, over the, I wouldn't be able to do a thing. If I go aft, it's going to be going around the quarter deck and still going forward. So the easy way, the quickest way, would be to go back down the hatch I came up. And I went down and up the bookstall flat with quarter seam wet through, you know. And I was walking as best I could with sea boots on, Weltons, you know, crawling up. And when I got to the other side, the ladder was straight. So I went up the ladder best I could. And the manhole was over here. So, the hatch, the manhole, and what a job I had. I think it was the most horrible thing that ever happened to me, reaching for that manhole.
So it was over to the side?
Yeah. And trying to keep me feet on the top part of the ladder, which was straight. But I got through. And I went to the side of the ship, and of course at this the port side was up like that. The side you could look sloping down, you know. And there was a boat there, a power boat, not a cutter, but a power boat. And it was full of men. And they were all bandaged and that sort of thing. And the same chap that I had seen getting his leg bandaged, he was in, one of the people in there, and they were all facing aft and just waiting. And I noticed the blisters, balanced tanks, you know, they call them blisters, I think. The boat was resting between the ship's side and the bulge on the ballast tank, full of men. And of course it was impossible, I could see it was impossible for that to be released in any way. They couldn't push it, the trolley part of the boat going out wouldn't reach that to push it over the top of the ballast tank. So it was impossible for that boat to ever get away. So I got a hold of a lifeline, and of course I blew my life belt up, got a hold of the lifeline and slid into the water. Of course they were shouting abandoned ship, you know, all over the place. And
could you swim?
Yeah.
Well?
I was never regarded myself as one that would go in for a race, for instance. I think I was more just a breaststroke and side stroke. I never did the crawl. I never learned the crawl. And yet I swam from being about 11 year old. I learned it at Gates at school. But I never excelled in swimming. And I swam around and I saw some bits of flotsam just astern of the ship, and also some heads bobbing around.
How cold was the water?
Oh, it was very cold. So I kicked my Wellingtons off. I kicked them off. I didn't just kick them off. I had to pull them off and swallow a lot of water, and you know, and pushing them, and until they dropped out. And I got those off, and then I made a positive swim to the stern, where I mixed with these other lads, survivors. And one or two had froth run down their face. And I thought, oh, they must be in a terrible state for that to happen. The salt water's gone into their lungs and everything to make that. So I just kept on bobbing and you see a wave coming and you stop breathing for a moment, let it flop over you, and then start breathing again. And I had to do that all the time. And then I saw a raft, and I thought, oh, the raft, this is my chance. The only raft I had seen on the port side of the ship at that stage. So I swam towards it, and it was chock-a-block with men. It was full. They were standing in the centre, and the raft was underwater. There were so many men on it. And they were watching me swim towards them. And they made room, just a little space like that. And
about 18 inches.
Yeah, about 14 inches, you know, just a little bit of room. And they made room and had difficulty in getting aboard, but they give us a hand. One fella sitting next on this side, they helped us, and I managed to get in and sit down where the space had been made. That was part of the reason why I lived, I think.
Was this a Carly float?
Carly float, yeah. It was a big Carly float, you know, the big type. And I asked her, I says, food and water? She'd got nothing. There was two paddles in the raft. And the other people sitting on the other side of the raft were all talking. There was two Maltese chaps talking. And there was one or two fellas that I knew, torpedomen, like myself. And I got a hold of a raft. I got a hold of a paddle, and I start paddling. And the other chap at the other side got a hold of his of a paddle, and he start paddling, and they start singing.
What were they singing?
Singing, you know, their usual jolly songs to try to make people feel a bit better.
And pop songs.
Eh?
Pop songs.
Well, it wasn't in those days. There weren't. There was no pop songs in those days.
Popular songs.
Oh, well, sorry. They were popular in those days, yeah, of course. When he thought about pop songs, it's been what they put on today.
Yes.
It was so. And kept on for so long, and then it gradually died out. And we drifted away from the ship, and the ship started to go down, more so than before. Still lots of smoke coming out where the hangars had been fire. But I would suggest that most of that smoke belching out came from the hangars, not from the engine room or anything like that. That's my, always has been my, in my head. And
did any others try to get on the raft?
Not after I got on. I swam about 50 yards to get on it. Away from the ship, you see, and the raft went past the stern and away, and was getting further and further away when I more or less chased after it, swimming.
So nobody had tried to stop you getting on because there were too many?
No, nobody. They just made room for me, and then of course nobody spoke to each other and mentioned things like that. Nobody said anything. But all I said was, they're bound to pick us up. Aircraft will be coming searching for us. We're bound to get picked up. And I kept on saying that, for my own benefit too. And it went on for a few hours. And there were still no signs of anything. Then the aircraft went over. And we waved and waved. And we went straight on. And I thought, oh, they're coming back. Trying to cheer them up. They'll be coming back.
Was it British or German?
British, yeah. And they said, it's one of ours, you know. That's one of ours and that's one of ours. They'll be coming back. And but they never did. So the hours went past.
Did the German warships come past?
No, they went away, that way.
Did you see them?
Yeah. In the distance, when I was sitting on the raft. Now, I'll put it in here, because I did a course in German in 1936, 37 and 38. The 38 course, a part of the course, was for the city...